Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. A very happy new year to you. Thank you so much for joining us here at Tech Talk for 2025, where we look forward to bringing you coverage throughout the year of technology and how that impacts us as blind and partially sighted people. And as has become a little bit of a tradition here at Tech Talk in recent years, we have assembled a small panel of blind and low vision folk who are going to be sharing with us their thoughts about what they're looking forward to in technology in 2025. And I'm going to start with RNIB's very own inclusive design lead, Robin Spinks. Welcome into Connect Radio, Robin. Perhaps you'd like to tell us what you're working on just now and what you're looking forward to most in 2025.
Yeah, great to be here, Dave. And the team basically working on lots of projects that are about digital and physical inclusion for products and services, everything from personal hygiene products through to websites and apps to smart TVs and wearable devices. So the boundaries are enormous in terms of, in fact, they're almost limitless in terms of the products and services we would work on. What am I excited about for 2025? Well, I was thinking about this over Christmas. There are a number of different technologies. Just to kind of kick that list off, I'm super excited to see where smart glasses go this year, because we obviously all had exposure to the Ray-Ban Metas last year. They've been really successful, really positively received in the community. But we know, for example, that Samsung are developing smart glasses for release later this year using Google Gemini. And if you've used Google Gemini, as I've been using over the past sort of 3 or 4 months, that in itself might be reason to be excited. So I'm really excited and encouraged to see what's possible to do, but more excited about what's to come, where this is all going to go. So I'm almost seeing the smart glasses at an affordable price point as being something that genuinely facilitates, you know, a lot more independence and a lot more freedom for us.
Nanjiba Misbah works in user experience in RNIB. Welcome in, Nanjiba. Have you been caught up with the smart glasses excitement, and what are you looking forward to in 2025?
I'm fascinated with how far technology has come. Smart glasses, I've heard rumors online that they might not have the feature that they do in America. I think it's the look ahead one. They might not allow it because of our laws in the UK. However, I feel it is an important feature for them to have. Another thing I think I'm keeping an eye out for is self-driving cars in America. You can get self-driving taxis, and I want to see how far that comes ahead. In terms of apps as well, websites out there, I want to see how accessible they are and make sure companies are aware of accessibility features and they see it as a priority. It's no longer an afterthought.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. We need to make sure that accessibility and inclusion are in at the ground. And it's probably going to be beyond the end of this year when we actually get into some self-driving cars, but they're certainly on the way. Sarah Bailey, you work in marketing at RNIB. Tell us what you're looking forward to this year.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing how Google AI and other search engines kind of make actually finding information on the web more easy for consumers. But obviously for us as marketeers, that creates a lot of interesting challenges about how we actually make our websites, you know, the content more accessible and user-friendly actually for those search engines to find that information and summarize it really easily on search engines. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting.
We're also joined by our co-hosts, Jackie Brown and Hubert Pavalkovic. Welcome in to you both. Hubert, what are you excited about for 2025?
Something that I've seen in 2024, and there are only glimpses really of this is what it could be, this is what we could be witnessing, and it hasn't come in 2024, but I'm hoping to see in 2025, and that is real-time AI descriptions. You know, the ability to point your camera of your either phone or wearable device, and for AI or the software to describe what you are looking at without you having to take a picture and for it to process it and then for you to get the details. It just adds that more seamless experience to describe what's in front of you, even, for example, when you're walking. I mean, at the moment, it sounds quite futuristic, but, you know, we have seen possible evidence that this is, in fact, being worked on. And it would be really nice to see. And if there's one thing I'd love to see flourish in 2025, it is this.
And Jackie Brown, do you have anything that hasn't been mentioned?
What would I like to see in 2025? Well, as the Queen of Braille Dots, I am hoping that we will see more of multi-line displays that are going to be incorporated into our screen readers, because it's great having multi-line devices like the Monarch and the Orbit Research stuff and the dot pad and so on, and you know, that's brilliant, but we want to be able to use more than one line of Braille with our screen reader. So I don't know how far down the line we are with that, but for me, I think that would be a real deal breaker to be able to have a multi-line display on your computer with your screen reader reading one more than one line of Braille.
There we are. So lots of thoughts there to get us underway. You're listening to Tech Talk and our 2025 panel looking ahead to the year in technology. How do we, panel, make sure that the needs of blind and partially sighted people are absolutely front and centre when it comes to the development of new technology? We talk a lot about AI, of course, and one or two of you have mentioned the smart glasses, and there will be other wearables. There were some wearables, actually, that in 2024 didn't quite make it. Remember the pin and the, was it the Rabbit R1? I don't think that was quite a wearable, but not everything that is announced quite flies. But those things that do fly, we want to make sure that we can be at that table and that we can be included in that. And so do any of you have any thoughts about how we ensure that blind and partially sighted people are in the minds of the developers as these products take shape? Let's come to you, Robin.
Yeah, this is a big topic, Dave. And one of the things that we have done is to really build relationships with not only the chief accessibility officer inside all the big tech companies. So companies like Microsoft and Amazon and Apple, you know, they've got people heading up accessibility globally. We would be in touch with those people directly and their teams, and really making sure that there is a regular dialogue to ensure that product development and product roadmaps, as much as possible, feature accessibility. Because often companies are releasing products and services they've been developing over a period of years. And I think we're now at a really exciting time where we're seeing accessibility being taken much more seriously by those big players. So I can remember 5 or 6 years ago when those company accessibility leads weren't allowed to talk to one another. We've got a situation now where we've got them going out for dinner as a group and actually talking. And that's because accessibility is being seen as much more of a collaboration issue than a competitive one. Of course, there are still commercial sensitive commercial elements, but there's consensus now among the big players that accessibility and inclusive design is something that needs to be seen as a collaboration issue rather than a competitive one. And I think that's a big push forward. That's not enough. We've got to keep going.
Najiba.
So my thing is, with AI, it can only work with the information that you give it to do everything that it's capable of doing. So things like disability and sight loss, as we know, it's a spectrum, being the AI ourselves. But we need to make sure that people using AI are aware of that as well, and they have that understanding, because I've heard of things like people search up some disability and it'll come up with a picture that isn't even related to it. Like, I think someone shared a picture, asked AI to show a picture of a wheelchair user, and it showed a trolley or something. I remember hearing that in a webinar. And in terms of the limits of AI and what it can do, I'm looking forward to seeing how far the Glide product by Glidance goes. It's coming out the end of this year in 2025, the first of its kind. And it's meant to be a cross between a cane and a guide dog that uses AI to help you navigate independently. So I think it's brilliant that AI is doing that. We also need to hear from people with sight loss about their experiences so that AI can be used to make things more accessible and usable for individuals.
Right, so we've still got a need for specialist devices, but we've just got to be on our guard for those cultural biases that might happen in some of those large language models.
Exactly, that's not going anywhere.
That's it. It's a great point. Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree on there need to be, I guess, some kind of review on how AI represents people with sight loss and the language used around it. I think the interesting thing will be, I guess, how it's regulated, especially across platforms and consistency in use of language. And also, you still need that level of upskilling with people with sight loss to be able to use the technology with AI, but obviously it makes it easier that AI will kind of do a lot of the heavy lifting for you in terms of using a product. So I think there's still a level of kind of cultural appropriations, but also upskilling that's still needed for people with sight loss.
Jackie, Sarah makes a really good point there about learning to use this stuff. How do we ensure that blind and partially sighted people receive appropriate training and skills development when it comes to making the best out of emerging technology?
Yeah, it's really important. It's crucial to be able to get people. It's all right having all this wonderful stuff that we love playing with, and we sort of, in a way, start to take for granted that there's always going to be a new toy out there to play with. But it's really important for people who are perhaps less tech savvy, or people who are just starting out their journey with sight loss, that they have access to the stuff and the training as well. So that's one of the things that RNIB has streamlined. The what was the Technology for Life team is now digital skills, because it is all about digital skills, people using online and their mainstream devices and specialist devices, but being able to get hold of the training and the advice in order to buy it in the first place as well, because there is so much out there now that it can be quite a minefield to decide. There are so many different wearables, for example. So what do people buy? What do you know? What are they? What do they think is the best? What's got longevity and long shelf life? So it is about trying to ensure that people, our customers and our partner organizations work with blind and partially sighted people to get the training that they need. And that's where the digital skills, the sight loss advice team with digital skills, comes into play, because it means that people can contact the RNIB helpline and ask for that help. There are other organizations, of course, their local sight loss charity or a sensory team, or other partners such as AbilityNet, for example. So there's a lot of different options out there for people to be able to tap into the technology, and we have to be sort of keeping up with it and mindful of what's out there so that we can assist people in using it.
Let's talk about getting around. Hubert, you are a guide dog user. We've heard about Glidance, this new mobility aid. Can you see that being part of your future in terms of mobility?
I mean, not for the next 8 years, naturally, because Caesar the guide dog is very much still very much young and moving at quite a speed. But I think it's an interesting development. I've not got to try this out yet, but I think it's one of these things. What I've heard about it, it sounds like it could potentially be quite revolutionary when it's ready. But I think it's all about, at the moment, getting it to the stage where it can be ready. And we've seen with Glide, it's still in very much releasing prototypes, and hopefully the final version will be ready later this year. But you know, I think it can potentially be. It just all depends how it works in practice once the final versions are actually ready. And I think the key to do get this to that stage is, you know, getting blind and partially sighted people involved in the design stage from the get-go to make sure that, you know, blind and partially sighted people are involved in the development of the product, so their views are counted from the get-go. And I've seen a lot of it done with Glide, for example, as one of these products.
Sarah, you don't use a long cane or a guide dog. You're low vision, I think I'm right in saying. And would you get in an autonomous vehicle?
I'm very excited about the possibility of that, yeah. I really would love the opportunity to be able to own one, or at least have more ownership of one, because there are definitely journeys that you can't do currently with public trucks, or even, you know, apps like Uber. You know, you can't go to that country pub in a taxi usually, because they don't want to drive out there and then not have a job coming back. So this kind of task in life that I'd definitely love to have the independence to be able to you know, have a car that I can say is mine and go wherever I want, basically, and have that freedom. So I definitely would use it, yeah.
And do you think emerging technology would shape... You like to travel overseas. I know you've been on a couple of holidays in recent years. Do you think any of this emerging technology, autonomous devices or AI, is going to influence those experiences?
I think it would give me more consistency in access to information. So I think, you know, in other countries, particularly when you go, you know, you don't just have the language barrier, but you have the whole structure of places like street signs and the way you navigate around places, and, you know, the whole, you know, the whole experience is totally different. Like, you, all the, I guess, all the things you learn about accessibility in your home place are kind of thrown out the window usually, and particularly if you go to a completely different continent outside of Europe. So I think having the one great thing about having apps like even Uber, for example, you know, I know how to use that in my own country, so I'm very familiar with it when I go abroad, you know, in whatever continent has it. So, and I feel safe and more confident because I have that familiarity with those apps, so, or technology. So I guess having AI that I understand, as long as I have the skills and knowledge to understand how to use it, you know, understand the language of AI, when I'm traveling, then I will feel a lot more confident to actually probably explore even more places, because it could give me, if anything, the benefit of being visually impaired and having accessible technology is actually that sometimes we have an advantage over other people because we have the skill to use technology to access more information sometimes than even the general public have. And also, the other interesting thing I was going to say is, obviously, now I know, obviously, we use an AI also potentially to, in 2025, to share our images on social media as well, to share those experiences. And the great thing about social media platforms potentially adopting AI to provide image descriptions on social media is, actually, we're not necessarily saying to the general population, you know, you shouldn't take responsibility for making your content accessible, but we're ensuring that we actually have that safety net, that if general public don't share alt text on their images, that the social media platforms will do it for us and we're not missing out. So when I want to go on to Instagram and search for that food place abroad, you know, that best, I don't know, best Italian restaurant in Italy or wherever I am, then I'll have a description that tells me exactly what all is in all of the images that I'm looking for. And I won't have to worry that in another country they don't think about alt text, or, you know, when they're creating their content, that won't be a problem because social media networks have made that kind of experience inclusive for everyone.
I like how mainstream social media has features that they can use to make video content accessible. For example, TikTok has text-to-speech, so you can turn the text that you type into speech with it, but not everyone uses it. So if something like that became mainstream on all social media platforms, that would be great for when you find places to eat. Personally, I use social media, Instagram, to find places I want to go out and try. I've got a long list saved on my phone, but a lot of them I can't share with my real friends because it's just text on the screen and it's not accessible. It's just music in the background. So I have to describe it to them and tell them. So it would be great if technology would make it easier to just share it and they know what's happening rather than me being the person that has to describe it and tell them. I know with Instagram now on the stories, VoiceOver does seem to read the text and didn't before. So it looks like maybe slowly changes are happening, but more could be done, I think.
Was 2024 the year when people really went out in earnest looking for alternatives to X, better known as Twitter? We saw a few more people joining Blue Sky and Threads and Mastodon.
I think it already started with certainly the, around November 2024, where Blue Sky really gained a cult following, and the numbers of Blue Sky users very much shot up around that point. That's when I joined, certainly. And what impressed me with, Blue Sky has been around for a while because I kept hearing its name, but what impressed me is how quickly they jumped on board with certain aspects of accessibility, such as alt text that has been mentioned by both Sarah and Nanjiba.
Yeah, and obviously as we record this, it'll be interesting to observe how things play out in terms of the regulatory framework in the United States where TikTok is concerned. So yeah, watch this space. Let's turn our attention to accessible gaming. Robin Spinks, I know the inclusive design team at RNIB have done quite a lot of work in this space. What are you expecting from accessible gaming in 2025?
Yeah, we published some research, Dave, a couple of years ago that we presented at CSUN in California, really just highlighting the appetite for gaming in the blind and low vision community. And that wasn't really a surprise to me, but it was good to have the evidence to be able to share with the industry. And we've moved on significantly since then, hosting our first international gaming accessibility summit, and now launching our dev kit and player panel. So we're really excited to see how that's received by the industry. But we're also excited to see what happens in terms of studios actually taking action and creating more accessible titles, building more accessibility into their workflows, and ultimately more accessible games for those of us who are blind or partially sighted.
Do you think we're overdue another kind of rock star title? Every time we speak with Sightless Combat, we always end up talking about, The Last of Us Part Two and all of that. And that was a great, stride forward at the time. But do you think we're ready for perhaps another really big leap forward in terms of accessible gaming, or do you see it as being more a evolution?
I think it's a bit of both. Forza Motorsport was a similar title. That was like a moment, a light bulb moment when people realized that a mainstream title could be enjoyed by someone who's blind. They could have blind driver mode and they could make their way around the track. I think what will be the turning point for us really is when we get to a point where this is the norm, that actually there are accessible features baked into every title that comes along. And it's something that we can then see becomes an expectation on the part of the community. I mean, if you think about smartphones, for example, no one out who's blind or low vision and buy a smartphone and expect there not to be accessibility in the operating system. If you buy an iOS or Android device, it's going to be there. It might be implemented in slightly different ways from one device maker to the other, but it's become ubiquitous to some extent. And I think that's where we want to get to with gaming. We're a long way off, but we want to get to a point where we can see a lot more progress. We're seeing it by the week. But I think it's about winning hearts and minds and also evolving a way of working across the industry that's collaborative, but also just incentivizes people to think in a way that creates titles that are much more inclusive out of the box.
And not just with games either. I completely agree. But we want to see it with apps as well. And like remember in 2024 we had Sonos, who were incredibly reliable and committed, as we all thought. I mean, even people that use the app regularly who can see, they found the app a bit of a mess as well, the new one. But for us, we were completely locked out to begin with. And yes, it has improved. And yes, I'm using it along with all the millions of others now to work with my system. But you know, it's a constant reminder that we need this to be not just an afterthought. We need to have apps and websites and everything really that's accessible. We need that to continue, and for people to have that baked into whatever they're developing. Otherwise, you could end up buying a washing machine, for example. You know, say you bought a Samsung washing machine just for argument's sake, and all of a sudden you were locked out of the app because Samsung had decided to redesign it, and then you no longer access your washing programs and stuff. And that's, you know, it needs to be a constant. It needs to be, you know, in the whole makeup and the whole development of the app altogether from scratch, rather than, oh yeah, we've got blind people out there who actually might use a washing machine. Really? We need it to be part of their ethos. And I think that's across the board with appliances, with gaming, with all kinds of stuff, really.
The thing is, accessibility is seen as an add-on and afterthought, something you do at the end of the development stage. Usually, what happens is when companies come to us, they've made this, they've already developed the app, website, product, whatever it is, and they want to see if it's accessible. And what they end up having to do is go backwards and breaking it down and starting from scratch that way. Accessibility is something that should be thought of at the very beginning, at the very start. It's not something you just clip on at the end, something you have to think about during the development stage, during the mechanics and so on. It's otherwise you just have to you start from scratch anyway, and it creates more work, you know? And if you did it from the beginning, it wouldn't be so much work.
I think the big difference now, though, is obviously that we are online, we're in social media, we're able to call this stuff out straight away in a way that, you know, perhaps 20, 30 years ago, it might have gone unchecked for a while. And certainly, you know, in the Sonos example, as soon as that happened, lots of blind people around the world were absolutely jumping up and down and saying, this is got to be sorted out.
Yep, we're on it.
Let's also remember 2025 is going to be the year of the European Accessibility Act, and we've yet to really learn how this will affect us in the UK. Do you think it will, Nanjipa?
I definitely think it will. Anyone who has a business that's global or customers in Europe, it is very important that you know about the European Accessibility Act, which is going to be enforced in June 2025. So it covers everything ranging from products, websites, apps, built environments, any they've covered everything. So Europe, it's one way to look at accessibility in Europe, because before it was each country had a different standard. This way it's more in sync. And there are obviously exceptions, but the main thing is if you do make any changes to your product, service, website, whatever you have before the launch date in June, then it will need to be made accessible. And if you don't make any changes, you have, I think it's 5 years to make sure that it does comply with the European Accessibility Act. And there are exceptions, but it's still early days, so we're going to see what happens, what it is that people do, because I mean, in theory, there could be loads of lawsuits of companies that get sued because of it, and lead by and it causes other companies to see that as an example of how they need to improve. And I think, I don't know yet, it's too early to tell, but I think it is going to definitely change things.
Let's finally turn our attention to health and the role of technology when it comes to health. Of course, at the end of 2024, RNIB launched the new simulation tool, Eyewear. curious to know how that's going, if anyone's had a chance to try it, and where you think that's at. But also the role of wearables and smartwatches, fitness devices, virtual training, coaches, subscription services. It's clearly a huge area for sighted people. And I know Robin Spinks and I will be lining up in April for the 2025 London Marathon. Yeah, is anybody using tech to help with their health?
For me, using smartwatches has very much encouraged me to actually get into fitness, get into, you know, walking and doing more exercises. It's thanks to the launch of technology such as smartwatches and fitness trackers that I actually thought, do you know what? It actually encourages me to get into fitness. You know, having my guide dog now who can walk at quite some speeds and quite long distances. I love a long walk and I love being able to track it using fitness trackers. So for me, you know, something like my smartwatch and be able to monitor all my health measurements does make a great difference. And mentally, it keeps me actually fairly positive because it feels I achieved something. So, you know, it's good to see that sort of technology develop. And I'd like, you know, fitness trackers to be able to track more health aspects these days. You know, maybe, you know, it'd be good to have, for example, the bands of the Apple Watch have more sensors in them to be able to track different things. How feasible all that is not for me to work out because I'm not in that industry. But it would be lovely to actually see a lot of these fitness trackers be able to, you know, give you an idea of certain health metrics. You know, it's not going to be...
What else do you want measured, Hubert? I mean, they do it all, don't they? Glucose, sleeping, temperature, your cycle, if you're a lady.
I was going to say, is there such a thing as being having too much? You know, can it go the other way as well, though? You know, can it be that you can end up with too much information that could cause anxiety in itself in some people? I mean, I'm not saying either way, but I'm just trying to be a devil's advocate here. Is there such a thing as information overload in fitness and health trackers and stuff? Is it going too much the other way?
I think my concern quite is how much people actually... I appreciate the metrics are there to give us an idea about our health, but I think what's important to also note is that they are not going to be as accurate as, you know, actual medical equipment sometimes. And I think what, you know, what is important to note is that people don't kind of use it as a definite when they see, oh, this measure is a bit low, you need to, you know, the people immediately start worrying. And actually what they are saying, what a lot of these trackers are saying is, you know, this is a bit low, you may want to consult a medical professional before you actually start, you know, worrying about it seriously. It's that sort of thing is where we learn to use it as a guide, but not let it get to us too much and actually consult a medical professional still, because I don't think, you know, these trackers can replace that.
Health isn't just about marathons, is it, Robin Spinks?
Well, I was going to say, I think that as much as I enjoy the smart tech that's been talked about in terms of measuring workouts and runs and so on, what's also equally valid is using it to help you to relax. So, you know, using apps like Headspace and Calm and other applications that are designed around meditation, they've got immense value. And actually, it might be sometimes just transporting you to a space where you can be in the moment, you can relax, you can actually begin to feel more connected with the environment that you're in. So the emphasis is always on activity levels, and I love that. But I think equally valid is the notion of relaxation and stress reduction. And I don't think we've yet realized the potential for wearable tech to actually deliver that. And if you want some demonstration of that, pop on the Ray-Ban Metas and get a meditation running and go and sit inside a nice forest or by a river, for example, and just immerse yourself in what smart tech can do to make you feel more at ease, more calm, get your breathing right.
So we're excited about mobility. We're excited about AI again, but we also recognize that there is much advocacy still to do, particularly when it comes to prioritising accessibility and inclusion at the outset, and also making sure that those quality gates are in place so that those accessibility issues do not lead to regressions when we get a software update. Sarah Bailey, you work in marketing. We've got a pretty full calendar in 2025. Are there any particular events that you're looking forward to?
I know, we tend lots of professional events, so it's always exciting to show eyewear at those events and get professionals to experience what it could be like to have in one of the top five eye conditions. It's always incredibly powerful. We did a lot of that in 2024. Just simply immersing them in that experience and giving them kind of a simple task of, you know, read this packaging or try and read this flyer, like what can you see? And they go, wow, like, you know, I just didn't realize. So we'll definitely use that at all our professional events. And the great thing is about eyewear is that you don't just have to use it in the headset. You know, it has the web-based version as well now. So that gives us the opportunity to get more people to experience using it at the event and after as well. We also obviously have got, I think there's more sight village events this year as well for blind and partially sighted people to come across the country, or across the UK actually, to see more, you know, exciting products that have been brought out within kind of, I guess, the specialised product space.
Five sight villages in 25. Fantastic. And Jackie Brown, you're organising an event, aren't you, in Northern Ireland again?
I am, yeah. We have Tech Fair 25. On the 26th of February this year. Last year, it was such a huge success. And we are coming together again to have what is turning out to be RNIB's premier event in Northern Ireland. So if you are in the Lisbon area and anybody wants to come along and say hello, the event is being organised for the 26th of February between 11 and 4:30 at the Lagan Valley Island in Lisbon. It sounds very grand, and hopefully it will be. And there is also the Inclusive Design Conference in Glasgow that I'm going to in March. I'm looking forward to meeting people there as well. So there's a lot happening. Just stay tuned for an event perhaps where you are or near to one where you can get to.
Robin, tell us more about that Inclusive Design Conference in Glasgow. This is the second one, isn't it?
It is. So Inclusive Design for Sustainability, 17th and 18th of March, 2025 at Glasgow Design Centre. And it will be the follow-up to the event we ran in 2023. We've got keynotes from Google, Meta, United Nations, Starship. We've got lots of companies already signed up. And you can find out more by going to rnib.org.uk/inclusive design. So that'll be a great conference. I'm also looking forward to Lisbon, to the event Jackie spoke about, and also to ZeroCon that takes place annually, which is a research disability and innovation conference. And of course, to the big event that takes place in California in March as well. So lots of cool things coming up in the calendar, and lots of opportunities to connect and make new partnerships.
We're going to have a lot to cover on Tech Talk, Hubert.
It will be fascinating to follow all this and see, you know, how it develops and, you know, just where accessibility will take us.
But also, how do actually event organisers immerse, you know, exhibitors and visitors into their events, you know, as well? Like, how do they increase accessibility of those using apps and immersive technologies to allow people to join virtually as well.
And to access the event, you know, independently as well. I know this comes up quite a bit, that actually in some parts of the world, events for blind and partially sighted people are really designed so that we can navigate those spaces independently. Sometimes in the UK, I think, you know, we always worry, and so we put loads of volunteers at the front. So it's all right, we'll have a volunteer, we'll take you around. And then that sort of takes the responsibility away from the individual for navigating that. So maybe we need to think a little bit more carefully about how we design our events.
Yeah, well, we're doing that with our event this year, so that we tried it last year with NaviLens, so people who want to come along to the event can actually use NaviLens to go around the hall and find out who's at what table and things like that. So it is important if you can go around under your own steam. There will be sighted guides there, of course. There normally are lots of events that are covered over the course of the year, but we are trying to make a concerted effort with ours to get people to be using their smartphones and their technology to actually do a bit of exploration themselves as well.
If you had to make a technology resolution in 2025, what would that be? Who'd like to take this first?
I'd like to try. I'll give it a go. Be a bit more patient. We're really, really desperate to get new tech and want to try everything. And some things you buy, you think, oh, well, I don't know if it lived up to the hype, or maybe it did work out for you. So really, that there is such a lot to choose from. Be patient with what's coming out and just map it a little bit and see.
Okay. Nanjiba, would you make a resolution in 2025 where technology is concerned?
I don't know. I want to just wait and see what happens. But one thing I do want to see happen in the future, 2025 might be too ambitious, but is with audio description is, so a lot of the shows and stuff on Netflix, you can get it in dubbed in English and other languages and subtitles as well. But I think it would be good if they included audio description in every language that it is dubbed in, so it's accessible for everyone.
So maybe yours is a more of an advocacy resolution that you'd like to advocate for audio description in other languages. All righty. Sarah?
Yeah, so mine would definitely be to embrace AI more and learn the language to kind of make my personal actually professional life a lot easier because there's so many opportunities. So yeah, learn and embrace it.
So learn to craft the prompts to ask the right questions and get the best out of it.
And learn which systems, it works with, particularly in a professional sense. There's so many different products. You can use different AI tools with ChatGPT, Copilot, on Office 365. So yeah.
All right, Hubert.
I think for me, I'd love to explore the world of gaming more and get into console gaming a bit more, explore the accessibility of gaming consoles, which I kind of started doing last year and it didn't really happen. I want to get into it this year because I've always enjoyed playing on the console when I had a usable vision. And since I've lost my sight, I simply didn't get into it. And I almost feel I need to be more informed and give it more of a go. So I think for me, it's to explore the world of console gaming, really.
And finally, Robin.
I think I'd like to use technology to create more opportunities to relax, unwind, and reflect.
Short and sweet. Well, that's brilliant. Thank you so much, everyone. And remember, let the person control the technology. Don't let the technology control you. I very much appreciate all of you being a part of our 2025 technology panel. Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavalkovich, Nanjiba Misbah, Sarah Bailey, and Robin Spinks. Thank you to all of you. Have a wonderful, wonderful 2025, and stay tuned to Tech Talk for the latest technology news and how it touches the lives of those of us who are blind or low vision. From myself, Dave Williams, and the rest of the Tech Talk team, until next time, bye for now.